We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
It's Howard Simon and Jeremy White.
I don't know how to say this nicely, but we really don't care what your guys' golf scores are. You know, we want to tune in on sports. It's sophomoric and super boring.
Howard Simon.
I usually do get made fun of and get ripped, and I am usually the butt of the humor and the jokes on this show.
It's not hard.
Jeremy White.
You give me a few minutes, I'll get Maryland the right kind of brownies. They'll change their mind pretty quick.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Howard's off today. It's 9:05. Happy hump day. It's Hoagie Hump Day. You can tweet at WGR. Use hashtag Hoagie Hump Day and win a $25 gift certificate to Jim's Steakout. If you missed it this morning, we talked to Sal Capaccio from the Senior Bowl from Mobile, Alabama. You can use Radio Rewind. Go back. It was about an hour ago, around 8 o'clock. Rewind, driven by Northtown Automotive. Joining us on the Wester Hotline as we talk Bills and talk about getting this team some receiving help is Andrew Filippone, former WGR host and creator of the bold trade idea to trade Juju Smith-Schuster to the Bills for a first-round pick. Andrew, good morning.
Jeremy, can I also be known as the creator of another Buffalo-Pittsburgh trade idea?
What was that?
I've got one more for you.
All right.
Are you ready for it?
I'm ready for anything.
How about you guys send Connor Sherry back to the Penguins?
What do you want? What do we want?
Would you take a mid-round pick?
No, probably not. would take a prospect.
Why? You want a $3 million fourth-line winger for another 30 games? How
well, you got to understand, it's very difficult around here filling out a full lineup of forwards. So, you know, I mean, I'm not against it if they were to dump Connor Sherry at the deadline or sooner. That's not a problem at all. The Sabres just seem to have this problem of not having enough forwards. And the idea of trading any of them away is... it's fine. Yeah, sure. You can have him. $3
million. Are you still, 8 points out? Are you still believing that the Sabres can get back in as a wild card or
personally, no. They have to play at about 116-point pace to get to eighth place. So
all right.
Yeah, no. I mean, I've got a Michael Frolik. I've got a Connor Sherry, a Jimmy Vesey, Zemgus Girgensons, and Johan Larson are all free agents. I mean, the Sabres could no doubt turn all of those into – fourth-round picks, maybe. Maybe not all of them, but yeah. So, sure. Sounds great.
Okay.
Sounds great. Is there any what I'd be more interested in than a mid-round pick is there a cap casualty that you need to get rid of? Can we eat some money off your books and make that pick a higher pick or get a prospect in return?
Maybe Bukestad. Maybe Nick Bukestad.
Okay.
He's not really good at anything. He's expensive, and he's not a center. He's not a wing. He's not a scorer. He's not physical. He doesn't really do anything particularly well, but he was a first-round pick. So
yeah. Well, I might want to – I mean, how much money, how much time there?
I think $4 million cap hit for maybe another 2 years.
All right.
With him.
Yeah.
Good talk.
Exactly. I mean, at this point, there are plenty of Sabres fans that would expect – or it would accept almost any trade from the GM. It's been, I don't know, it's not been a great year for that. It looks like a team that needs a little more help from their GM. I mean, you're in Pittsburgh. Bottrell was thought of, we can get to the Bills in a moment, but I don't know, any post-Bottrell thoughts? I mean, have the Penguins seen their AHL program dry up after his departure? He was often given a lot of credit for developing from the farm up, of course, supplementing, you know, Crosby, Malkin, and such, but I don't know. Looking back, any thoughts on his time there or his time since he's left?
I mean, not really. I mean, I think the prevailing thought here, at least for me, would be that a lot of these lieutenants, assistant coaches, assistant GMs have left, and we haven't seen it affect the NHL team much. I mean, they made a trade, Jeremy, that pretty much any team in the NHL could have made this offseason. They got John Marino from Edmonton for a fifth-round pick, and he plays on the second pair for them. He's 22 years old.
Yeah.
And he's fantastic. I mean, he's smart. He's responsible. He jumps into plays and scores enough points. He makes it look easy. And anybody could have had him for a song. So, you know, it hasn't really manifested in their evaluation of other teams' players or young players. They've had guys that are not, like, lighting up score sheets, but they've had bottom six guys come up. Sam Lafferty is one of them and has given them a shot in the arm in a bottom six role. So, you know, not as far as I can tell. I mean, they're actually one of the best stories in the NHL this year, given the fact
injuries,
that,
yeah.
You know, that all the injuries, right? I mean, and not that people want to hear me play the smallest violin in the world for the Pittsburgh Penguins with all the draft lottery help they got back in the day, but, you know, they've missed Sid and Malkin for considerable stretches this year, and they're only, I think, what, 4 points out of first place going into the All-Star break.
Yeah. All right, well, good luck to the Penguins. I would say congratulations.
You don't mean that.
No, I don't mean any of it. That's right. That's right. All right, Andrew, so the Steelers. I mean, the Bills and the Steelers were teams this year that were pretty close. You had the Sunday night game where the Bills clinched that victory. You know, Pittsburgh's season, how much was it thrown off by the injury to Ben Roethlisberger? What do you think this team ultimately would have been, Pittsburgh, if Roethlisberger does not get hurt?
Well, they were 9-6-1 with him and Antonio Brown the year before. So, you know, people that want to tell you here that they would have, you know, won the Super Bowl, they would have, you know, been as good as Kansas City or Baltimore are delusional. You know, they have, in a short amount of time, revamped their defense, and they were aggressive in both major contributing factors to upgrade their defense. They moved up. They picked Devin Bush with the 10th pick in last year's draft. He forced a ton of turnovers in the first half of the season that helped them win games. And then they made the Minkah Fitzpatrick bold move. They traded their first-round pick for the first time in a half century. Miami wanted to make the trade with Pittsburgh because they felt like, of the teams they were talking to, the Steelers would finish with the worst record. There were four other teams that wanted, that were willing to give Miami a first-round pick. I don't know all of them. I know Kansas City was one. And Miami ultimately picked Pittsburgh, and now the Steelers have an all-pro safety on the back end of things. So, you know, I guess it's a hard question to answer me, Jeremy, because if they have Ben Roethlisberger for the year, they don't have Minkah Fitzpatrick. And so without Minkah, with Ben in, I think they're probably like a 9-7 team.
Yeah.
I believe that Fitzpatrick had that kind of effect on their defense where he was, you know, after maybe Nick Bosa and a couple other guys, he was as impactful as any player on the defensive side of the ball this year.
Well, I mean, you know, you said they wouldn't have had Fitzpatrick. Is that just because you think Miami picks a different team? They don't bet against the Steelers
Exactly, yeah. They see Ben Roethlisberger, and even though the Steelers are 0-2, they're probably thinking, well, they just lost to the Patriots in Foxborough and Seattle at home. You know, they were not a bad 0-2 team. They had lost, you know, they always get blown out against the Patriots on the road, and you know, they had lost a game in the fourth quarter against Seattle when the trade got made. So I don't see any way that the Dolphins make that deal with the Steelers because the Steelers have never had a losing record as long as Ben's been the starting quarterback.
Speaking with Andrew Filippone in Pittsburgh. So, all right, that's the genesis for your idea is you're trying to find a first-round pick for the Steelers, trying to get one back. And the Bills draft 22nd overall. Your idea was to trade Juju Smith-Schuster to the Bills. The Bills, a wide receiver-hungry team. And the Steelers maybe looking for a first-round pick. So, on you know, just on that level, I could see it. With Juju, you know, he was obviously very productive with Antonio Brown on the roster and with Ben Roethlisberger as the quarterback. Last year, you know, everything we just said about that Pittsburgh team without Roethlisberger and without Antonio, how did that affect Juju himself? I mean, I would say if I go back a year, Juju Smith-Schuster in my eyes was one of the number one, granted this is a fantasy point, but he was consistently getting mentioned as one of the top dynasty fantasy values. Like, this guy's got it. He is good. Without Brown, sure, his job gets tougher, but he's going to get the targets, and he produces. He's great. He got hurt. You had Devlin Hodges, Mason Rudolph. Is the shine off of Schuster in any way, or is it just circumstances kind of led to a bad year for him?
Well, it is with me. I think the Steelers would give you a different answer. I mean, the way they've talked Tomlin and Art Rooney since the season ended, they're trying to convince the outside world that he was a victim of circumstances, Jeremy, but I'm not buying it. He did not make the most, not even close, of limited opportunities. We're talking about key drops. They beat the Jets. Not a lot of people know this. They beat, maybe up in Buffalo, they beat the Jets in Week 16. If he makes a play that I would say 90% of wide receivers make, Hodges on a fourth down play with in the waning seconds had a bad snap that he picked up and he kind of threw a prayer downfield, but it was over the defensive back's head. Juju went up for the ball and just missed it. He just dropped it. And that would have been worst case scenario. Would have set the Steelers up at the New York 10-yard line with like 30 seconds to go. Worst case scenario. More likely he walks into the end zone. So, you know, that's a play you expect your number one wide receiver, even without Ben Roethlisberger, you expect him to make the play because the ball was there. And that wasn't the only time that happened. He fumbled in overtime against the Ravens at home. They lose that game in part because of that turnover. He had a ball go through his hands on an opening drive against the Colts. It ended in a pick that was a perfectly thrown ball. So he was just off all year. You got to realize this, Jeremy. He is very much a byproduct or a symbol of, like, this modern era of athlete. He is very, maybe more so than any athlete I've ever been around, more concerned about his social media presence and his brand than anybody. And I'm going to include Antonio Brown when I say that. He's obviously smarter about it, but he puts more time into it. And so I think what ended up happening this year with him, and you couldn't understand this in part because he's 23 years old. He's one of the youngest wide receivers in the NFL. He was so used to that communication being all positive. You know, especially when Antonio Brown blew up. Juju's the good guy. He's the wide receiver that we can build around. He cares about the team. You know, he fumbles in New Orleans to lose the game in Week 16 last year. He cried at his locker. He cares. He wants to win. He's in it for the long haul. He'll make sacrifices. He was so used to getting positive reinforcement from fans that when he struggled this year, it was like we saw a whole new person. His body English on the field was as bad as I've ever seen it. He just was kind of moping through the year, and I think all the negativity, and fans flipped on him. They weren't making excuses for him. And I think what ended up happening was he was such a public person that when you are a me-first guy in that way, when you make it about yourself and you're winning, fans love you. And when you don't win, they turn on you fast. And I think he had a really hard time handling that. And I know the team tried to address it with him. They tried to help him with it. But it was just a lost season of Murphy's, lost season for him. And I think the team that trades for him, Jeremy, would like to think that, you know, a change of scenery and a fresh start and a better quarterback fixes all that.
He's not due for a contract yet, right? He's under contract for this season, and after that is when the extension would have to come. So value on a guy like this, you know, everything you just mentioned, I got to be honest, Andrew, you didn't sell too many Bills fans on this idea if you want that first-round pick. But, you know, is the price a little different? Do you think the Steelers would be open to, I don't know, a later round, not a late round pick, but later than a first-round pick? I'd be hard-pressed to believe the Bills would give up a first for a guy like that. You know, if you're talking about a me guy, a social media guy, the Bills are pretty buttoned up. And, you know, you tell me about the Steelers. They're a franchise that has had success despite maybe not being that way. Are they trying to be a little bit more like that? Mike Tomlin's level of control of the franchise, I feel like there's been a shift or a shifting kind of conversation about how well he handles it now that people have seen a little bit more of Antonio Brown, of Le'Veon Bell, even of Ben Roethlisberger over the course of their careers.
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, I would not lump in, let me just make one thing clear, I would not lump in Juju's personality. He's not an extreme case like Antonio Brown. He's not, I don't think he's made it to, like, even the Odell Beckham Jr. Side of things where he's going and, you know, asking for trades, you know, at the conclusion of games. You know, I do think that the Steelers, what they're going to do here is I think they're going to offer him, they're going to offer Juju this offseason if they don't trade him, and I don't think they will. I think they'll offer him a deal that's not on par with what number one wide receivers have been getting, what Antonio Brown got, what Odell got, what Julio Jones got. I think they're going to try to find a soft spot, a tier below that, and I don't think Juju will take it because I think he'll say, you know what, I get Ben Roethlisberger back, I'll put up big numbers, and I'll bet on myself. So I don't think the Steelers are in a rush to get rid of Juju because he puts himself first like a lot of wide receivers do. He's definitely not a Larry Fitzgerald. He's not one of these guys that, you know, is going to make every single sacrifice for his team. But then again, even as I say that, Fitzgerald never has taken like a hometown discount or less money. He just isn't a look-at-me guy. I don't think they'd take a second-round pick because of his age. I mean, we're talking about a guy who I believe the stat here, Jeremy, is he was the youngest wide receiver in NFL history to make it to like 15 100-yard games. He like broke Randy Moss's record. So I think that would be their counterpoint to you. Like, yeah, he had a very disappointing season, and he struggled with a lot of things, both on and off the field. But you put him in an offense with Ben where he doesn't have as much burden to make plays, and he goes back to being a really productive wide receiver like he was when Antonio Brown was here. So I don't think there's a buy-low possibility, I guess, is my point. I don't think the Steelers would trade him for anything less than a first-round pick.
At least not until maybe next year when you get more of a look at James Washington, Diontae Johnson, a couple of good young receivers on that team.
Well, yeah, Johnson, I think, has a chance to be even better than Juju. I mean, he put up better numbers this year, and so, you know, the logic or reasoning there is, you know, he played with the same quarterbacks as Juju. So if he was able to do it, why wasn't Smith-Schuster able to do it? And I don't think it's a case of, well, you know, Juju always got the team's number one corner or got the other team's double team, because I was at the games and that wasn't the case. Teams just weren't as scared or concerned that Juju was going to make plays. That was, you know, that might have been an issue for him at the start of the year. I mean, he played Stephon Gilmore in week one, and then the Seahawks double-teamed him, and San Francisco put Richard Sherman on him in week three. But after that, it got easier for him. So they do have a great history of finding wide receivers, Jeremy. You know that. I mean, this franchise has churned him out. So I think in that way, they look at him maybe as a bit more expendable because they just think they can go into the draft and find the next guy. And the first-round pick would give them the draft capital to do something like that. So, yeah, I think for the Bills end of thing on this is, you know, do you want to risk finding a wide receiver on your own? I mean, do they have enough? Have they earned your respect in terms of like they can evaluate and find the right wide receivers? Does this GM, does this front office, have they shown you an ability to find those guys on their own?
Yeah, not yet. I mean, in the draft, it's been Zay Jones. They trade for Kelvin Benjamin. You know, they make good pro personnel moves. John Brown's a nice move. Cole Beasley's worked out fine. After that, you know, you've got Robert Foster, who flashed last year and then couldn't get on the field this year. So I don't think they've really gone all in on a receiver yet. And if they're going to, this is the year to do it, whether it's at the draft or if it's chasing Amari Cooper or someone like that, which I do think is less likely than just drafting one.
And I like the Juju idea more than Amari Cooper. I don't know about you. Yeah, I think Cooper is going to expect to be, you know, if Sammy Watkins got, what, $16 million a year in free agency? Was that the deal for
him?
Yeah,
and Robbie Anderson's looking at like 15 this year too. So, yeah,
what's Amari Cooper then? I mean, is he
20? Yeah.
Right. I mean, and with Juju, like, yeah, I mean, the Bills are probably risk averse in that, you know, they want to, you know, they believe in their process and building and stuff, but at some point, you know, you've got your franchise quarterback. He's going into his third year. I think it's incumbent on them to get him better weapons. And this trade that I, you know, put out there would be a shortcut to that. And it's a guy that you know has been productive. And if you want to take a glass half full approach, you could make a lot of excuses for his production plummeting this
sure,
year.
Sure, right. I think the answer is where we started. Connor Sherry for Juju Smith-Schuster, who says no. Let's get it done. you know?
Oh, man.
So, all right, well, one last thing. Is Ben coming back?
Yeah, he is. I'm not as optimistic as some of my counterparts here are that it's going to be, he walks back, he's, the savior of the franchise again, and they can go from 8-8 to 12-4, and, they're better than the Ravens all of a sudden. It's just hard, I think, for a 38-year-old. I don't know if you saw him, Jeremy. He didn't look good on the sidelines, did he? I mean, come on.
No. He looked like, looked like he'd missed training camp, a little bit out of shape, yeah.
He told Michelle Tafoya he's not going to shave until he starts throwing again. I wanted to text him and say, Ben, how about you lay off a carb until you start throwing the football again? My goodness, he blew up. It's just, look at Phillip Rivers and Eli Manning and, his draft class, his peers, and they didn't have a big injury, and both of those guys fell off a cliff. And I think Ben's better than both, but watching Aaron Rodgers too a little bit this year, I thought he was just as risk-adverse and conservative and safe as I've ever seen a quarterback with that skill set. So I don't know what's going on there. But, no, I don't think the Steelers can just blind faith expect Ben to come back and be a Pro Bowl quarterback again. And because of their cap issues, Jimmy, I mean, he didn't take the Tom Brady deal at all. I mean, he's going to get $36 million next year.
Oof.
And so that's going to limit them in a big way in terms of what they can do as far as the supporting cast is concerned.
All right. All right, Angel, thank you. Thanks for joining us this morning, giving us the rundown on at least one scenario. We're talking receiver every day. So every single player that comes up, we're talking about it. We're exploring. We had DJ Moore's name mentioned. I'm going to, look into that for Carolina. They might move on because they might want to draft a new one. Like, everybody. Doesn't matter who you are.
I was impressed how big-time you guys are that Capaccio is at the Senior Bowl.
At the Senior Bowl, oh, yeah.
That's big.
Yeah. A lot of receivers, got to check them out. All right, thanks, Andrew.
All right, see you, Jimmy.
Andrew Filippone, former WGR host, works at 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland, and always a pleasure to have Andrew on. So had an idea and then talked me right out of it. No way for the first-round pick. Second-round pick, maybe. Third-round pick, maybe. I'm interested. I'm intrigued, maybe. A guy that has produced and – he wouldn't be by himself. Whoever you have has John Brown on the other side. So maybe. Might just be easier to save the money and spend the first-round pick on the receiver, too. So decisions. Senior Bowl coverage, of course, Sal Capaccio is there. We'll continue coverage throughout the week. And Sal joined us this morning. You can radio rewind to that puppy. That was at 8 o'clock this morning. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550 to join us, to share a thought, whatever you need. It's WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
You ideally don't want to just draft a guy that day you draft him, and looking at your depth chart that there's no way, barring injury, that right, this guy's making it. But you do want to add depth. Maybe we use a later asset for a future pick or to trade up in this year's draft.
Bills GM Brandon Bean. Brayton, I think I found a unstoppable force meets an immovable object. One of these scenarios where I'm going to challenge a listener to try and make sense of something.
Okay.
All right. Here's how it works. The moment you talk about the depth of a position in a draft class, you eliminate best player available. Talk me out of it. It's a fair point. How can you possibly say best player available while you are acknowledging that you may choose a position based on future depth at the position later in the draft?
Well, it's like in the draft when you're watching the draft coverage, how they talk about like, oh, well, you know, best player available right now, but the Bills really need this guy or, you know, this position, whatever. And then they point out like, oh, hey, that's the best fit for this pick right here.
Right. You never see their boards. So any conversation about best player available always comes back to that for me. Every team tells you they take the best player available. Teams before the draft say all the time, when you reach is really when you get in trouble. But yet they never tell you, well, we reached. And you only say that after the fact, after a player didn't work out. So just comes down to that. And then there's something to consider here as well. If you are putting together your draft board, you could consciously or you could subconsciously do it. By the way, 803-0550. If you have a thought on this, just would love to hear a additional point, a counterpoint, any thought on this. I'm just kind of stumbling upon it today, really, as we've talked about, you know, the wide receivers are a deep class. Take a defensive end and then take a receiver in the second round. All right. That I'm not saying that's a bad plan. I'm just saying that can't necessarily, it doesn't have to jive with best player available. That's it. You can be close. It can be a 9.2 on the defensive end and a 9.3 on the receiver, but you take the defensive end because you know you're going to get a better number in the second round. That's fine. I'm not saying that it's a problem if you do that, just that you can't talk about the position class as a whole and also talk about just going best player available because you don't know what your needs are going to be in 2 years, 3 years, etc. That's all. So I think I'll probably be saying that a bunch down the line because, you know, one of the things about the draft that's fun slash dumb slash silly slash is what it is trying to cut through all of the stuff that is said. And at the end of the day, you know, you do your best, you take your best educated guesses, you feel the team, and you see how it works. But, you know, you got to wonder about that. Would it lead you to downgrade the top receivers? Because when you are grading these players, right, let's say you got the receivers, your scores go from first round to seventh round, and you give six of them first round grades and none of them second round grades. Does that lead you to be more likely to take one because you don't want to get frozen out? Or you know, that's the thing about scoring these players in any way that you want to do it. Overall, these the scoring, the prognosticating, it's all subject to your own, not bias, but, you know, subject to your opinions, subject to how you design it. It's just like any program, you know, a program is designed by a person. It can have inherent bias built into it just because it's designed by a person. So if I'm looking at my draft board and I'm ready to slot the receivers up there, do I slot in drop-off level? And with that, does that mean, Jerry Jeudy, we might in another draft class have put him as the seventh best player. And this will put him as the 13th best player because he's not that much better than CeeDee Lamb. Meanwhile, the defensive ends, we do feel that there is a bit more of a drop-off between number one and number four or whatever. You know, you're filling out this draft board as best you can. The idea that you can rank 217 players in perfect order is really, I mean, that's quite an undertaking, and it's quite a lofty expectation that anybody could do it. That's the other thing about the draft that always doesn't drive me nuts. I just always find it funny. Like, as much as you could say every team, you know, 9 teams, 10 teams passed on Patrick Mahomes, there might have been 17 teams that were going to pass on him, and my guess is there were 32 teams that were going to take him. It just doesn't, you know, it's where they were going to take him. You know, in your fantasy draft, we don't talk about it that way. In a dynasty fantasy draft, like, wow, look at that. Can you believe you passed on Julio Jones? Like, well, yeah, I mean, I picked somebody else. I would have eventually taken Julio Jones. Not like I didn't think he was going to be any good. Granted, there are scenarios like that where you just don't think a player is going to make it at all and you stay away or he's not on your board for whatever reason. Maybe he's a bad teammate. Maybe he's got a marijuana test. Who knows what your reasoning is? You know, these drafts are tough. It's tough to figure out. The best you can do is get as many high picks as you can, because that's where, you know, if you're trusting everybody's scouting, and yes, that means ESPN and Walter Football and Yahoo and everybody. Everybody's seeing the same players. Take all the opinions, kind of smash them together. That's probably the pretty close to who's going to be good and who's not. Different circumstances are going to lead to different levels of success. And, you know, you do what you can. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. We announced our third roaster for the WGR Celebrity Roast. It is EJ Manuel. EJ to roast Eric Wood along with Brian Brahm and Richie Incognito. I don't know what makes a good roaster. Steve Tasker, great roaster. Fitz, great roaster. Trying to think who else. Like, who got Marty? Andrew Peters, great roaster.
Wasn't J.P. Dumont pretty good, too?
J.P. Dumont, great roaster. Jason Woolley, great roaster. Yeah, we've had a bunch, you know, over the years. So, I don't know much about Brian Brahm. Richie.
We'll see how that goes.
All right. Going to be there for that. And then EJ Manuel, we'll see. I'm trying to think, like, what do we remember EJ for off the field? Anything?
Not really. Outside of just, you know, probably drafted way higher than he probably should have been drafted. Senior Bowl really helped him out.
Did it?
That's the talk.
I mean, Senior Bowl helped out Josh Allen, too.
Yeah, that's true. But there were already a lot of people at that point talking about Josh Allen still going in the first round just because of his raw talent and the upside. Whereas EJ Manuel, it was just like, you know, maybe he could if I remember correctly, he was more like a third or fourth round type of player.
I don't remember either.
But
I don't believe that. I think that's the kind of thing that said 5 years later. The idea that the Bills took a third round talent in the first round, you know, like that's, I don't know. Maybe. There probably were some. I mean, there's some saying Josh Allen was a seventh round pick. So, you know, that's the other thing. It's not like you have two people commenting on the draft. You have thousands. So, much like anything else, it's a little bit like art in that way or music in that way. Someone's going to love it. Someone's going to hate it. And if you constantly point out one side or the other's existence, it's going to seem like it's a lot more there than it is. Like, I think we're dealing with that with Josh Allen now. The idea that there are haters still. Like, well, yeah, I mean, some probably. There are some skeptics, and there's nothing wrong with being a skeptic about any player in the league. I mean, every player deserves, not deserves, but every player gets some level of scrutiny. You know, I heard a call of the afternoon show yesterday. Somebody asked if, somebody said, I feel bad for Trey White because Tre'Davious White's dealing with all these people that were saying, like, wow, did they make a mistake with the trade? And, you know, there's some people being really negative. And I thought, man, I mean, if you exist online at all, you deal with people that are negative and people that are mean to you. And maybe you're mean to people, too. I mean, like, it's, if you think a pro athlete can't handle that, you know, like, they can do a lot of things. They can get off online. They can get offline. That's what I'm trying to say. Nah, not the other one. You know, it's just, I'm not the least bit worried about Trey White worrying about it. Then again, there's Andrew Filippone, who just, you know, last segment talked to us about Juju and how the negative response from a lot of fans kind of got to him. You know, some guys plug into that. Some guys don't. Sometimes we tell the story of having a chip on your shoulder is good. Sometimes we tell the story that a guy's too distracted by the negative talk or too distracted by all that. 803-0550. Speaking of, like, that level of engagement, the arguably the quietest person ever in sports when it comes to off the field stuff, Derek Jeter, right? In the Hall of Fame, the guy didn't do or say anything during his career ever, right? Did he exist off the field at all? And there are all the stories about his gift baskets are like after he retired. I think it was after he retired, but there's nothing. Jeter never gave anybody anything. He was, at least that's how it came across to me. I feel like he was always thought of as the most professional ever. And in large part because, you know, you never heard a word from him outside of what was going on with the Yankees and their games. And he wasn't A-Rod. A-Rod was a lot different in that way. What was the biggest difference? How they carried themselves off the field? I mean, A-Rod's a Hall of Famer. He's probably a first ballot Hall of Famer. Wait, steroids. Never mind. Forgot about that. That wasn't a joke. I actually forgot. Like, oh, never mind. They're not going to let him in. Barry Bonds, right? They're not going to let him in because of steroids, too.
Roger Clemens as well. Sammy Sosa.
Or they will next year, yeah. Sosa got 16% of the vote. Bonds was short. I think Bonds, is next year Bonds last year? That's when they let him in?
I don't remember if it's his last year or not next year. I'm not too positive on that.
You basically have the writers of the baseball writers and, you know, the pro football writers are doing this too for the Hall of Fame. And I actually, you know, as someone that can get a little bit snarky about it, sometimes I can understand it. Other times I think it's kind of silly. You just kind of get to the existence of the gatekeeping mentality. You know, the writers believe they are gatekeepers for the Hall of Fame, whether it's the Football Hall of Fame or if it's the Baseball Hall of Fame. I think of Terrell Owens for this. I mean, Terrell Owens is without a doubt a first ballot Hall of Famer. And once you get a load of the politics, you know, once you get a load of why they keep him out because they don't like him, and once you realize that sometimes guys get in because they were nice to members of the media, you know, like, I don't know. I think sometimes you can see that and become a bit, maybe not cynical, but a bit just kind of pushed away by the process. Like, oh, we're holding personal vendettas for the Hall? Okay. All right. We're picking and choosing who we apply it to. We're going to apply it to player X, but not player Y. Oh, okay. That's interesting. You know, it's, I understand on some level sometimes when a player gets credit for being nice to the media, and then I think, I don't know why anybody should care about that. It's I mean, don't get me wrong. It's good to be nice to people, but how much did that really affect your bid for the Hall of Fame? And, you know, in an ever-changing media landscape of Instagram and whatever, Marshawn Lynch is a great example of this. Like, does he really need anybody? Does he need post-game press conferences? Does he need that, or can he just use Instagram? Can he use whatever he wants? You know, it's not exactly a popular opinion within the media. And again, like, I'm not the person down there needing the quotes, so I look at it a little bit differently. I don't begrudge the reporters or anybody like that the relationships and how important those can be. Sometimes I wonder how much it matters to anybody else. And, you know, that's just, I think it's just kind of how it goes sometimes. So it's nice that these players are accommodating. I thought about this, you know, I mention this all the time with hockey GMs and coaches. You know, they come on the show. They put forth the image that they want. They get to choose. When you become an athlete, a coach, a GM, you can be as forthcoming or as buttoned up as you want. It's your choice. You get to do what you want. You can be Tim Murray, who maybe says too much. You can be Jason Bottrell, who doesn't say much. You know, you can talk about growth. It's your choice. And, you know, for the people that are going to evaluate you, whether you're a defensive end or a second-line center, whoever you are, you know, you make a decision on the public version of yourself you want to put out there, and people react the way that they want to. All this came from Derek Jeter in the Hall of Fame somehow. But, I mean, that's one of the reasons Jeter's in on first ballot and near unanimous is because of his professionalism. If he's a jerk, he doesn't get 97%. He gets 93%, 91%. But he was the captain, right? He was the captain, the Yankees. He was everything. So that helps him, and there's no doubt about it, even if it's subconscious for some or fully conscious for others. 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Extendo Sports will close things up, and then the Instigators are back, right, for the first time this week. Instigators, John Murphy Show. No, I'm sorry, One Bills Live. Those two shows are rolling regular coverage here on WGR.
Breaking sports news airs first here, guaranteed. WGR Sports Radio 550, 2020 Sports.
Extendo Sports.
And just to leave you with Extendo Sports, you may remember, oh, I don't know, a year ago, 2 years ago, Someone in the New England media wrote an article asking if the New England Patriots were the last humble team left and nobody else was humble.
2-minute warning.
Oh, why'd you have to bring it up? Only the Patriots were humble now.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
Come on.
It was at the height of the election and, you know, even invoked presidential candidates saying, I'm great, I'm this, I'm that. And think, you know what? There's no more humility left in the world, and the Patriots might be the only thing that's humble.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that or Bill Belichick wore a visor at the Senior Bowl that said 8 rings on it. In Roman numerals. VIII rings.
Going back to Roman numerals here.
Yes,
we
are.
There's something that has Roman numerals.
You know, one way to be humble is to wear a hat that says 8 rings. The only thing you could do past that is actually wearing the 8 rings. But hey, it doesn't bother me that they're not humble. I don't think that they should be humble. I like teams that are brash. I only hate that the Patriots get talked about as being humble when they're just not. Same thing about Tom Brady.
Last minute of play in
they
the
just,
show.
They won't embrace their inner heel. Unless they're, you know, like pulling the double switch on me, which is they're the heel that acts like the baby face as the thing that the heel would do. These are all wrestling terms. I apologize in advance. Or, I'm sorry, not in advance, but I just apologize. Yeah, 8 rings at the Senior Bowl. Pretty good flex for Bill Belichick. It is, well, it's about that time for us to be done. I sent in those prop bets to Bet Online. We'll see if we get any, if we get a winner, and they actually use one. We'll donate $250 to the charity of our choosing. I've got a couple ideas. We'll see. I'll let you know if we win. So stay tuned for that. Sal from the Senior Bowl continues all week. And up next, the Instigators. Sabres on bye week, going to the All-Star game. Maybe a little bit of a state of the team from the guys. And One Bills Live on the way with plenty of Senior Bowl coverage on the way as well. This is WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.